We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus USA.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Network's Thinking Through the Trees show. And I'm excited to welcome the program, Michael Chappie. Michael, how are you? Last week, we just touched base, and I said, trust me, we're going to have some interesting guests in 2020. Last week, it looks like lots of people were taking off. This week's been just booming, and I'm like, January's almost over. It's crazy, but I'm excited about our guest. And I guess we have three giants in the room. We have a giant in acting, and he's a giant in so many ways, a giant in boxing. Well, I guess I'm the giant of professional wrestling, and Michael, you are a giant in all terms as well. So I'm excited to welcome the program, celebrity, boxer, and actor, Jack O'Halloran. Jack, how are you? And I appreciate you calling.
I'm well, thank you. Thanks.
I'm excited.
How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. And I'm sure boxing came first, Jack. Did you always want to be a boxer?
Well, actually, football came first. I played with the Jets and the Eagles for a short period of time, and I got very frustrated in Philadelphia when Jerry Wallman bought the team and brought in Joe Kuharik, and he traded a championship team away, and Ali had just won the title. So I said to a friend of mine, you know, I could beat that guy, and they said, well, that's a good idea, and they put me in a gym, and 6 months later, I embarked on professional boxing.
See, I wouldn't have known that part of the story. I was always, because again, if you look at Wikipedia, it probably does say it in certain ways, Jack, but I would never have thought you're a football first. How many people do you know that were professional football players and boxers? Football came first. That's really a strange story in certain ways.
Well, especially since, you know, when I played ball, I weighed like 285. And then when I got into boxing, they brought me down to 226, 230, and I like was shaking. You know, this is crazy, but it worked out very well. I was just a good athlete, you know, and no matter what sport I ever did, I did very well in it.
Okay, all right, go, Michael, with your first question.
Okay, so I watched your fight with George Foreman. And, obviously George Foreman's a legend of boxing, but you fought pretty well against him.
Yeah, I actually was beating him a couple rounds, and I walked into a punch. It was my own fault. You know, I didn't really – I was my own worst enemy in boxing because I took it when I started, I was 16, 17 and 0, something like that. And they found that I had a disease called acromegaly, which is a pituitary, tumor of the pituitary. And they told me I shouldn't be boxing at all. They couldn't figure out how I could box because it caused depression and stuff like that. And I just laughed at them. And I kept going. And so some days I would be, you know, I would get into training and stuff, and boxing became like a day job because of where my father came from and where I came from in the streets. I was involved in family business and we ran the unions and stuff at nighttime. So I was doing a lot of that in daytime. You know, I'd have a daytime job so that, you know, to keep yourself looking honest. And I would take fights on a week's notice, 2 weeks' notice. I never trained like Ali or any of these people Now, every once in a while, I would do a month of training, and when I did, I beat the best in the world. You know, when I put my nose down to the grindstone and did what I was supposed to do, like any sport, I don't care what you do. If you're playing football, you're playing baseball or basketball, you know, it's what you get out of a sport, what you put into it. And, you know, and so I was my own worst enemy, and I make no excuses for it. You know, I wound up in several Hall of Fames and stuff, and because I beat some very good fighters, and I had the ability to fight. You know, I just, I abused it. I should have taken it a lot more serious than I did, but, you know, I did what I did. You know, so what I did was when I retired, just to show that, to give back to boxing, I came back and I took a young man and in 6 months' time made him super middleweight champion of the world, and I created a guy named Freddie Roach.
Oh, wow.
Now is one of the most renowned trainers in the world.
Now, Jack, because boxing wasn't first for you, did a promoter discover you? Did someone say you should be a boxer when you were playing football and say, man, this would be a great gate kind of, you know,
well,
sell a lot of tickets?
I was a very tough kid in the street. And when I decided to take a shot at, and when I made this comment to somebody, it was the very serious street people, and they said, "Well, you know, let's put you in the gym and see where you go." So, you know, when they put me in the gym, and I had a natural talent, you know, and they just you can tell right away whether someone has a talent to do something. And I, you know, like when I played ball, I weighed 285 and ran a 4.640.
Holy cow!
You know, so I was a pretty good athlete, you know, so I had the ability to move and I liked fighting and I could fight, you know, I was a tough kid in the street, and people say to me, well, what about your amateur career? I said my amateur career was in the streets. You know, I never lost an amateur fight in my life, but,
under the streetlights.
Yeah. So, you know, and I had some people when I was younger that taught me how to fight, you know, and it came very natural to me, and I liked it. I enjoyed boxing. You know, boxing was a great outlet. You know.
Wow. All right, God, Michael, your next question.
So, how did you get the role in Superman? Did you have to interview or?
I was doing a movie with Gene Hackman. We were down in Spain doing a picture called March or Die, and they called Hackman and myself. They flew us up to London to meet Richard Donner, and we had a break in the movie, and they flew us into London to meet Richard Donner, and I had a conversation with Donner, and he asked me. They came to me to ask me to do the film, as they did a lot of films. I turned down a lot of films. And so when they came to me for Superman, and I talked to Donner, and he explained the character, and he said, "Do you mind playing someone who's a mute?" And I said, "No, I embrace that," because Jackie Gleason was a friend of mine, and he did a picture called Jigo, and he won an Oscar for it, playing a deaf, dumb mute. And I said, if I ever get a chance to do a character that I use body and facial expression, I will embrace it. And Nan was a perfect character because General Zod was a vicious general, you know, and Sarah was a man-eater. So somebody had to relate to the children because it's a children's audience, you know. So I played this brutish guy like a child, learning how to, you know, walk and learning how to use his eyes and stuff of that nature. And it worked out pretty well, you know. We were very lucky.
Yeah.
It worked well, yeah.
Did you think that Superman would be as successful a film when you...
I mean, you're talking... the cast was dynamic. I mean, God, Brando and Terrence Stamp is a brilliant actor. Sarah's a very fine actress. And you had... You had a lot of good people involved in the film, and Richard Donner is an amazing director, and you know, and it was a great story. And you're talking about the very first American superhero, that was a legend in the comic books, you know?
Yes.
So the story then had a great writer for the script, and it came up very well. And I really liked the project when they first offered it to me. I said right away, I said, yeah, positively I'll do this. And I had turned down the Bond movies because I didn't like the character, and I didn't care for the script. And it turned out, worked out very well. When I turned down the Bond movie, I was already doing March or Die, but they came to me to do the part of Jaws in the Bond films, and right. I turned it down because I didn't feel comfortable with it. So they couldn't believe I turned it down, and, you know, because it's supposed to be such a big expose, but. When they came right back to me with Superman, and I said, absolutely, for sure.
All right, Michael, next question.
Well, it turns out, was that your real beard? I have to know. In Superman.
Well, it was in the beginning, yeah. I had grown it for the picture, but then when they kept they adding pieces to it, and they were using this acetone, and it kept, you know, kept breaking parts of your beard off and stuff. So it was pretty much mine most of the film, but then it got to a point where there were too many holes, so they boom. You know,
right. I was going to say, because you had a beautiful beard.
Well, it was mine. It worked really well, you know.
I
liked having it, but, when you're doing something, we did that picture for, you know, a couple of years, you know, and every day you're going through a makeup routine. We went through a lot of makeup to get a certain look and texture and stuff and skin tone and all that stuff. So, you know, it became a pain and easier for them to put it off.
So Michael and I were talking about our height, 6'10", 6'6". How tall were you, Jack?
6'6".
Okay. So at that point in time, 6'6", you were towering above a lot of the people in the movie, right? For sure.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was probably the tallest person in the picture. But, you know, the great thing about, we had Trevor Howard. There were a lot of great English actors that played big parts, you know, the senior people on Krypton and all. And, you know, and Brando's a brilliant actor. We had a lot of fun. It was great. It really was. I've been very fortunate in my career to have worked with some really fine actors. You know, Mitchum was unbelievable. And Jimmy Coburn, Omar Sharif, and, you know, Gene Hackman.
Oh, wow. It's just a
Brando.
Yeah.
And,
you know. It's like a who's who of.
That's wild. All right. Go, Mike. Next question. I love Michael's research. I'm going to get Jack. I am a follow-up question kind of guy. I can come up with questions, but Michael spends a lot of time since we started doing a co-hosting with me, because I like talk. I don't like always talking myself, and I love to get another point of view. He really researched questions, but be ready, Jack. You might hear a question you've never heard before, but that would be pretty hard.
Okay.
To say. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Michael.
So I have to. So you turned down the Bond film because obviously.
Yeah.
You didn't want to be Jaws, but was there a certain aspect of the character that you just turned you off?
I didn't want to. You know, I remember when I very first started in the industry, and they had come to me in 1966, I think 67. Steve McQueen did a picture called Thomas Crown Affair.
Yes,
and he was up in Boston.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. We shake up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus Mission USA.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
And I got into a little rhubarb in the street, so they shipped me up to Boston before I got in trouble. And I was in Boston, and Steve McQueen came into town, and we looked after him, you know, and he and I became very good friends. And he said, you know, Jack, you got to come down and get on a set. He said, I'll put you in the movie, get to give you your union card, you come to Hollywood, we're going to have a good time. And I said, yeah, you know, I'm just embarking on boxing, and I'm liking it. And, you know, I said, I don't... Oh, he said, well, you got a home if you ever want to come to Hollywood. And I turned him down. But we stayed friends, and he did a picture, Towering Inferno, where his name was Captain O'Hara. And he called me on the phone. He said, how do you like your name up in lights and all this? And he's always trying to entice me. And in 1968, I knocked out the number two ranked heavyweight in the world, Manuel Ramos, in L.A. And they came to me to do The Great White Hope with James Earl Jones. And some friends of mine from the East Coast actually put the thing together for me to do it. They wanted to get me off the streets. And the picture was being shot in Spain for 6 months and all this jazz. And the producer, they flew me out from, I was living in Jersey, they flew me out to meet the producer and all. And they thought I was just going to walk in and sign a contract. And I, you know, and the guy explained everything to me, and I said, you know, I just knocked out the number two heavyweight in the world, and you want me to go to Spain for 6 months to do a movie?
Yeah.
I said, you know, I'm looking to fight Ali, and you want me to go do a film? And I said, and friends of, you got to understand where I come from. My father was one of the most foremost Italians ever come into the country, and a very strong, influential man called Albert Anastasia, who ran a little company called Murder Incorporated and was partners with Costello and Lansky and everybody. And I was in that world. And so somebody from that world put this thing together for me to do this movie to get me off the street so I would never go to prison and stuff like this. And Eddie Foy III was at Fox, and they reached out to him to put this role in place for me to do. And he thought I was just going to go in and sign a contract. And when I turned the movie down, they were flabbergasted. And, you know, and Eddie Foy said, oh, my God, you're going to get us killed. You're supposed to do this movie. And I said, don't worry about it. I'll talk to Raymond Patriarca, and we'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. So I turned him down. And when I was walking out of Fox, James Earl Jones was walking up the steps into Fox. And to show you how small the film industry is. And he stopped me. He said, you're Jack O'Hara. And I said, hey, you're James Earl Jones. Big deal. And he said, no. He said, is it true what I just heard about you? I said, well, I don't know. What'd you hear? You just told Hollywood, because The Great White Hope was the biggest movie in Hollywood at the time. You just heard Hollywood to take a movie and stick it. And I said, well, yeah, not so many terms, but if you wanted to look at it that way. And he said, I got to shake your hand. I never met anybody that told Hollywood to do that before when they were coming after you so strongly. And I said, well, it's just not my thing right now. So a couple of years later, when I retired from boxing in 75, they came to me very strongly to do a picture of Farewell, My Lovely with Robert Mitchum. And when I looked around, I said, you know, I think it's time. And I went and did a screen test, and Mitchum said, it's either him or I don't do the movie. And so I blame it all on Robert Mitchum. He became like a father. You know, we were very close, and he was probably the greatest acting coach you could ever have. He was pretty good. He walked me right through the industry, and we had a lot of fun. We did Farewell, and Farewell, My Lovely is a classic picture today.
Right? Yeah,
it was a great cast, and it was the first mistake I made in the industry. You know, I would have been nominated and would have probably had a good shot at winning supporting actor that year. Mitchum set it up for me to meet Johnny Carson, and I met Johnny Carson at the Polo Lounge.
Wow.
And he wanted me to do his show, and he said, if you do my show, I'll get you nominated. He said, I think you did a great job in the picture. The picture's a great picture, and Mitchum loves you, and we think you have a shot at an Oscar. And I said to him, but your show is live, isn't it? And he said, yeah. I said, I don't think I can do it. He said, what are you talking about? I said, I'm going to walk out on the stage. You're going to ask me about my father, and I'm going to ask you where the men's room's at. He said, you get up and leave? I said, yeah. He said, why? I said, because I don't talk about my father, and I don't want anybody else talking about him. And so he said, well, we'll give you a list of questions that we'll ask, and we won't ask you that. And I said, John, I said, no disrespect, but you're the number one investigative reporter in the world right now. And you have Albert Anastasia's son in your set, and you're not going to ask me about my father? I mean, do I look like a fellow off a turnip truck? You know, I said, so I really don't have any disrespect or anything. I just have to decline. And Mitchum screamed at me. He said, what, are you crazy? He said, Jack, this is Hollywood. Who cares? They love that kind of stuff. You told him about my father and everything because he and I were very close. And he said, yeah, but Jack, it's no big deal. I said, no, well, to me it was. And it was foolish. I should have done the show. I probably would have got nominated. A lot of people came to me and said they would have voted and all this other stuff. While I was doing King Kong, they had the Oscars come up. I had 20 phone calls. Why didn't you pursue it? Why didn't you? No. All you had to do was run an ad in the reporter, you know, that you're running for supporting. But I wasn't into the industry that much. I was, you know, it was a job. You understand? It was a diversion away from where I really was, where my heart was, you know? So.
Right. I see that. I was looking through your internet movie database thing, and I see you did a lot of TV in the 80s.
I didn't really like television, but friends of mine would call me up and say, please do this and please do that. And, you know, the first thing I ever did was, what was the guy? The Cannon. And he was a friend of Mitchum's, and he called Mitchum and he said, please get that kid to do my show. So I did one of his shows, and people said, wow, you should be doing TV all the time. And some of the shows I did worked out extremely well. And I probably could have done a lot more, but I was always working. I was doing films, you know?
Yeah.
Lindsay Wagner was doing Bionic Woman, and she wanted me to do one of her shows. It was a double episode, you know? So the guy from Universal called my agent and my agent told him, he said, you know, he doesn't read for people. He'll come and see you and stuff, but he doesn't, don't think you're going to get him to read. He said, the guy said, no, we just want to meet him. And so I went over and I met this producer at Universal Studios, and the guy said, well, the director's dying to meet you. And he came in and he asked me to read the script. So I read it like a magazine article. And the guy said, no, he said, would you please read it for me? I said, did you talk to my agent? He said, yeah, but, you know, I would just really like to see you. I said, let me say something to you. If you're asking me, can I do this character and would I do it? I'll tell you right now, I'll do it better than anybody in this town. And I'll do it well. But I'm not a monkey that you hold up a treat and I perform. I said, you know, if you like what I do on screen, and we can work something out. He said, I love what you did in the films. And I said, well, you know, there you go. So, and I got up and left. And the guy couldn't believe it. He called my agent. So my agent said, well, you know, I told you. And so, you know, Lindsay was furious. So I get a phone call like 2 weeks later. They call, and this is what television does. They wait till the last minute. And it's, you know, so they call my agent. And they said, okay, we're ready for Jack for makeup. And wardrobe fittings. Can we, you know, keep have him come over? And they said, well, my agent said, well, he's gone. I said, well, what do you mean he's gone? No, he's off doing the film. Well, how long is he going to be? Well, he'll be gone for probably a couple of years. He's doing Superman. He said a couple years.
Oh my
gosh. He said, yeah. So Lindsay called me on the phone. She said, Jack, what? I said, listen, if the guy would have called me before I had the call to go over to London, I would have stayed and done your show for you, but I never heard from him. So what do you want from me? Oh, she fired the guy.
Oh,
she was so angry. She fired the guy. And I felt bad for her because it was a great, I would have enjoyed doing it because I like Lindsay. Right. Lindsay was a really neat lady and a good actress. And it would have been a lot of fun, but you know, I never sat around and waited for stuff, you know?
Absolutely.
No, I wanted to jump because we are running close out of time. Jack, what's the latest projects you're doing? Like, what are you promoting right now for people that can check you out and find info on you and stuff? Where can we go?
Well, we wrote a great book called Family Legacy, and it's about my father in New York, and we tell a lot of truth about stuff. And it goes from my father's death to the Kennedy assassination, and I tell the truth about the Kennedy assassination and some other things in the street. But, you know, we felt it was time to set the record straight on a lot of things because there's so many misnomers that go around, the stories that are, people write books and stuff. So we got three more books coming out. And so we're going to do the film, A Family Legacy, and then we're doing a television series that's going to be dynamite because it's going to, you got to understand that what we're doing, the story is that we're not doing just another mob picture. We're doing, we're telling the story of how organized crime in the old days, they took their illicit monies and they put it back into the growth of a nation. They created a lot of jobs. My father ran the waterfront. They created the unions. They created construction jobs. Their money outlets were gambling, loan sharking, extortion. If you didn't have money, how could you not pay them? So they made sure you went to work, and they invested in, you know, General Electric, Westinghouse, insurance companies, and they invested in the future of a country, and no one ever talks about that.
Yeah,
so
wow.
we're telling a lot of stories about the truth of a lot of things, you know.
Jack, is our website to purchase your book and stuff? Where can we go?
Yeah, it's called FamilyLegacyTheNovel.com. FamilyLegacyTheNovel.com, and it has my whole history, my acting history, the book. You go to, it takes you right to Amazon where the book is there, and you know it's like a 5-star book on Amazon. It's been on there for
fantastic
for a lot of years, and you know we're just now getting ready to do the film, and everybody's very excited about it. So I'm coming out with the other books very repetitiously.
Awesome. All right, we'll definitely.
And we're going to have a lot of fun.
You have to update us for sure. Thanks again for calling. We have to head out to our next interview, but I appreciate you coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Thinking Through the Trees show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show's Caregiver Dave Celebrity segment. I'm excited to welcome the program Caregiver Dave. Dave, how are you? You know, we're bustling through January. It's almost over already. I can't believe 2020. We're almost one twelfth finished. It just goes so fast. I just remember it was like January 1st, and now I'm sitting here. It's January 24th. Are you kidding me?
I know, and the only good news about it being the end of January is I get to go to Hawaii on the 28th for 2.5 weeks, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, well, that's, yeah, you're going to Hawaii. I got to look at your schedule. We're going to be doing different schedules for radio now. So that is interesting.
Yeah,
so
I'll be 3 hours ahead of you.
3 hours ahead. That's, I always have to get these usual times and how it works. And when I call Australia, sometimes I feel really goofy as well. So, you know, it is what it is. But go ahead and introduce our guest.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Well, last night, every Thursday night is date night for my wife and myself. We've been married 45 years, and we saw Star Wars, coincidentally, and it was awesome. And I saw Felicia Saunders in the movie, and she did a great job. In fact, there was something on the web that listed the best 22 black actors from best to worst in Star Wars, and guess what number you made, Felicia?
I've seen that post before, but what number am I?
Number eight.
Wow, top 10.
So not too bad, not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all.
Especially when you think of
And I guess you were the very first black female actress who had a actual speaking role in Star Wars, so congratulations for that.
Thank you. Isn't that crazy? I mean, I didn't really know until a friend of mine told me, like, maybe 5 or 6 months later, and I was like, you're kidding. So then I went and watched
kind of
all
silly,
the movies
isn't
again.
It?
I'm like, you know what? It's true. It's crazy.
It is.
Well,
that...
like Virginia Slim says, we've come a long way, baby.
Right?
All right. So
let's start with you. Mm-hmm. Were you always, I mean, did you catch the acting bug when you were just a little kid? Did you have a stage mom who took you to all the auditions? How did that start?
Well, I didn't actually start my full acting career until after grad school. So I went to UCLA and got my MFA in acting. And then right after that, I just was going on auditions and things like that. But when I was younger, maybe around 7 or 8, that's when I really caught on to wanting to be a performer. And I had never asked my mom for anything ever. I was a very quiet and introverted kid. But when I heard that my third grade class was having a theater program after school, that was the first thing I asked for my mom. I was like, Mom, can I just do this program? I really want to do theater and acting. And so she granted it to me, and I literally fell in love with it ever since. So.
Well, it's interesting to look at it.
This,
so, Dave, I wanted to go back because I did some digging up in her story, and I love her story and the fact that academics must have been very, very interesting. And we talk about specifically enough, you had that acting bug, but you had other dreams and aspirations than being an actor. Can you explain that to people?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, I grew up, you know, I had a lot of extracurriculars. I was a swimmer. I did synchronized swimming. I did theater. I had a full load of AP and honors classes. It was a lot. And that's why I'm able to sort of juggle so many different things now as I'm older. But, I also had interest in languages. So, I went to college for, East Asian studies with a Japanese concentration, and I minored in theater. So I was able to sort of, you know, juggle both of my love of culture and language as well as acting. So I just grew up loving so many different areas of study. So that was very important to me.
Yeah.
Absolutely, Dave. It's like, it's an interesting thing to look at their backgrounds, as we've learned all the time, of where they came from to getting those opportunities.
Right.
So what was that first acting career when you were a kid that you asked your mother for?
We were doing a little play, and it had like paupers, and there was some Shakespeare elements in it as well. I mean very young age I like fell in love with Shakespeare and did monologues from him as well. So it was like, you know, a mixture of both like things that were written right in the moment, as well as like Shakespeare monologues that kids could do. So it was like a mixture of so many different things. And then my first play was 12th Night in sixth grade. So I was hooked ever since.
So what was your major in school? When did you like change to acting?
My major was East Asian studies with a concentration in Japanese language, and I minored in theater. Where that came from, I grew up loving anime and loving taking, you know, Japanese classes outside of my regular classes. So as soon as I went to Princeton, I started taking East Asian classes and Japanese classes, and I was like, I want to study abroad. I want to study Japanese cinema. So that's where that came. I mean, I just always loved Japanese culture and language. And then I knew after Princeton, I wanted to sort of take more classes in theater and acting and movement. So I applied for grad school, and I was lucky enough to be one of the 8 actors in my UCLA class that was selected. So I've just held on to both of my passions, my high school and college life.
So you had the theater bug, it sounds
very
like.
Very impressive.
You had the theater bug. You had the theater bug, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. And once I was at UCLA in grad school, that's when we started doing sort of short films. And I've always loved films and always wanted to be in film and TV. So that's when that sort of like really grew in my grad school life.
So very impressive that you went to Princeton. I'm assuming you did well. How did you balance that mix between academics and extracurricular activities and acting? I mean, how hard was it?
Well, I mean, it was very hard, obviously, but I mean, I sort of was used to it in my high school life as well. I mean, I went to a very college preparatory school, so I was prepared for college very well. And so I don't know. It was just I have always been a very busy person and able to juggle so many things. Even now in my later, you know, after a few years after college, I'm able to juggle so many things because I love it. I love being busy. I love making sure I'm doing what I love while I'm being busy. So, I mean, juggling theater classes. I also swam a little bit in college. It wasn't really hard for me because I just love doing each of the activities I was a part of.
So you're the kind of person
it was
that...
Very hard. I won't lie
proud.
About that.
That was saying, you're the kind
sure
of...
Your mom is very proud of you. How supportive was she... as you started doing more and more, and when did she really come on board and say, oh my gosh, my daughter's talented?
Well, my mom has always, always, always been supportive. I have an older sister as well that has been, you know, with me in all the schools that I've attended, including Princeton. She's always been there, and she's 18 months older. So my mom was very supportive about, you know, you know, of both of our, you know, career choices and what our passions were. And she put us in so many different activities. We did, like I said, we did swimming, synchronized swimming, theater, speech and debate. We did so many different academic
decathlon.
We did so many different activities, but I mean, it was worth it because once I got to college, I was like used to doing so many different things and thankfully excelling in a lot of those areas. But right now she's just always been supportive ever since that, I think ever since that sixth grade performance of Twelfth Night by William Shakespeare. I played Malvolio. And ever since she saw my performance, I memorized all my lines. I was killing it on stage. She was like, Felicia, this is something that you got to continue and do. So she's been supportive ever since. So
would you, yeah.
It's amazing.
Would you rather do theater or be doing television or movies?
No, where my roots are come from theater, and that's where I'm classically trained as well. But I really love film and television. I grew up loving it and wanting to be a part of it. And I've been lucky enough to have roles such as, you know, Tabalizo and Star Wars. So I want to continue that love of, you know, film and TV and get more roles that way. But I mean, I always have the theater. I'm a part of the Independent Shakespeare Company, so I've done a play with them. So, you know, I can always do theater, but, you know, I would love to keep on pursuing film and TV because that's where my heart is as well.
Do you speak fluent Japanese, and will your journeys perhaps take you to Japan to maybe do some films or TV shows?
You know what? It would be nice. I've had a conversation about that with my friends as well. I'm like, that could be an option. I am mainly conversational.
You speak, right?
Japanese. Yeah, I'm conversational. You know, I've been there so many times. I love traveling there and I have a lot of friends there as well. When I'm in the environment and speaking Japanese every day, obviously you become more and more fluent. I just have to be in that environment. But I am conversational. And that would be great. I love Japan so much. I definitely want to have like a home there one day. Fingers crossed.
We definitely have
if you. If you can see it, do it.
she definitely will.
I know.
In so many ways. And thinking about those situations and learning how much, you know, knowing a foreign language, being able to study such challenging stuff must make it easier to really interpret scripts and memorize your lines, right? Especially with your ability academically. It's got to help in a lot of ways when you're in theater or anything, just to be able to nail lines, go in and audition in seconds compared to some people that might take a lot longer.
No, definitely. I mean, the fact that my major was East Asian Studies, I mean, I had to defend my thesis in Japanese. So just being able to memorize in a different language. I mean, and the language is not, it doesn't have the same grammar structure as English. So you kind of have to memorize things backwards. So your brain really is working when you're speaking in a different language, like just like Japanese. So yeah, I would definitely agree that it really works your brain so you can, you know, memorize things and break down scripts, you know, easier. So I definitely agree.
And that's got to be Dave.
Well, I'm assuming that you've got.
Yeah, sorry. Dave, I was going to talk about Ivy League.
I
wonder how she can stump people on set at times with her knowledge base. It's got to be kind of funny, an Ivy Leaguer like herself, you know, going to auditions and maybe sometimes pulling the wool over someone's eyes in certain ways with her intelligence.
She probably has a reputation. Smart kid on the block.
No, I mean, I don't really just like throw it in people's faces. I mean, it's really cool to be in, you know, from like to have gone to Princeton because, you know, people see it on your resume. And they're like, oh, you went to, how was that? And I'm like, first of all, it was very cold, very cold in New Jersey. But I mean, I really loved that, you know, I went to such a really, you know, academically rigorous school and just like, you know, reputable school. So it's great to have that in my life and, you know, on my resume. It's wonderful to have.
It sure is.
So we have a character.
I'm
so
sure
so
you got this.
Dave, I was going to say, they have a character for at one point in some show in Netflix, Amazon, or somewhere where she's going to play an Ivy League brain in some show as a lead. It's going to happen. Trust me. You just got to get your agent to find
well,
that.
Well, it wouldn't be a stretch because that may be who I am.
You are.
Yeah,
so, it would be hard to play.
Exactly. But that's exactly what, you know, sometimes it's hard for actors that really aren't Ivy League brains to play an Ivy League brain when you are. But all right, good, Dave.
So I'm sure you got the job in Star Wars because you did another Star Wars. But how did you get that first job in Star Wars?
Well, I mean, I am, you know, I've right out of grad school, I was auditioning and, you know, trying to get myself out there and get, you know, if not big roles, but like smaller roles to sort of build up my resume. I mean, this business always is, you know, someone who you know, and it's good to sort of have connections in this business. And, you know, someone, while they were doing reshoots for The Force Awakens, there was a line that was in the script that they would like for someone to say instead of it being off screen. So, you know, that came across my lap as an opportunity. And, you know, it wasn't supposed to be like guaranteed in the final cut of the film until, you know, right after I did my scene. I got word that it was in the film, and I was like, how is this possible? First of all, when I heard
we have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. Stitcher.
Stitcher.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archived CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
Stitcher.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future. The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
That I got that part, I was like, this is not real life. This is not real life at all. I mean, and then right after when they're like, it's in the final cut, it's in the film, and you have a character name and a credit, I was like, no. I literally peaked at that moment.
I was very lucky to have had that.
You are an accomplished actress, obviously. Do you think that, because, you know, the industry has been such that, you know, it took forever to get any actors of color into films and television, and then, you know, it started slowly and started building up. What's the environment like today? I mean, do you feel like you got these breaks because of your color or because they were really looking for talent?
I mean, I think, you know, at the end of the day, really, if you want a career, like, if you want longevity in your career, it's all about talent. It doesn't matter about what you look like or where you come from. I really think at the end of the day, it's training and talent. Now, the landscape today, obviously, you want to be more inclusive, and I'm so supportive of that and wanting to sort of promote that in film and television, because you want to show stories for, you know, people all over, what's representative of this country.
Sure.
In this world.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I don't have the final answer of why I was selected for this role, but I do know it's a mixture of both, because we do need to make films that are more representative of this world. And then also hire people who are talented. So it's like a two-part answer. I'm just happy that, you know, I can be representative of the person, you know, the first African-American woman, female woman. Well, that's basically redundant, but human woman with a line. I'm very happy to just be in that.
That's a tremendous thing. And then what was it like working on the Star Wars films? Kind of tell us that, because again, you got to keep everything so secretive. You can't mention everything. It's like, you know, even if you were working on it, I'm going to film, you can't go tell your friend next door, oh, by the way, I'm going to film Star Wars, because they really have you sign releases and craziness, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about what was it like working on Star Wars?
Listen, first of all, that non-disclosure agreement is ironclad. I do not want to break out and tell people about what I'm doing. So I'm definitely good on that front. But working on set and being directed by J.J. Abrams, I feel like that was the most favorite moment for me, because, I mean, even though I had a smaller role, he treated my role like I was Harrison Ford or Daisy Ridley. Like, he was there with me, making sure that, you know, the delivery was right and making sure that, you know, the camera was set at a certain angle and things like that. So he's very detail oriented, and just working with him and seeing how he worked with actors was just like the most memorable moment for me. And that's the same way with Force Awakens as it was with The Rise of Skywalker. It was just working with him. I would love to work with him again, hopefully in the future. So that was my favorite moment. And it was surreal.
I just wanted to throw in, as I was watching the movie last night, I was shocked when Carrie Fisher was on the screen. I said, oh my God, she's back. She's alive. And I remembered hearing that she had, she was in the process of making that film when she had died. So I'm so glad that we got to see her one last time.
And do her passing, with such elegance, you know,
yes,
doing like an homage to who she was in that last film was just beautiful. I'm so glad that they did that as well.
Yeah, they handled it well.
And then that's a portion, but they also use it as a hologram as well, right? Certain characters back from the older Star Wars that they bring back through holograms, which is interesting how they're going to fight that in acting at one point, right? Especially rights to everyone in performance. But that's the thing. And I think that the tradition, let's ask a question about Star Wars. Were you a Star Wars fan before auditioning or before getting the role, like in the traditional Star Wars?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I was. You know what? I'm of the prequel generation. So when I was like 14 or 15, I was so like, I loved the prequels so much, because, I mean, you know, it was just what was coming out when I was growing up. And then I had also seen, you know, New Hope and the other films as well. But I really was just like, that was my generation. And then these films as well, since I get to be a part of them, I have a different love for them, but like a similar love than when I was younger. So it was like, I've seen Star Wars in different stages of my life and, you know, have been a fan ever since.
Dave, we're not going to spoil anything.
The last one?
No, really? She would not be. She signed a disclosure to say if it's really the last one. Dave, come on now. She knows something. She's not going to. I'm not going to TMZ in 5 minutes and say, by the way, I just got it.
I know nothing.
She knows nothing, but I think the thing that this film did, and I'm just going to give you a critique real quick, it was one of the best, the last film, in my opinion, but I'm not going to spoil it for people that have not seen the movie yet. I promise people that, because I get upset with when I'm binge-watching things if someone's going to spoil anything. But ultimately, I think that they really did that. This movie is unlike the other movies. And if I looked at kind of ranking ones of the newer ones, I would put that. And you know what's really interesting? I would put the movie about Harrison Ford's one, the young I thought Solo was phenomenal and just wasn't promoted well. It was a very good film. I mean, I love that movie.
Right. I also loved Rogue One as well.
Yeah, me too. All of them are great. But, I mean, if you're a Star Wars junkie, forget about it. I mean, but I hope it's not the end. But it's a smart way to take a break for a second, have all the Star Wars junkies go crazy, and then something else happens. Because you could tell a story forever, and who knows what will happen. Have you gotten the chance to visit Disney Studios for the rides and stuff, and for the Star Wars stuff, and how exciting that is.
You know what I was about to say. I mean, Star Wars junkies in the meantime could just go to Galaxy's Edge and just get their fix there, and until the next films come out, if they come out. I don't know anything, but I have been to Galaxy's Edge. If that's what you're talking about, Disneyland.
Yes.
The rides and things like that.
Yes.
No, I was there the second weekend it opened, and I was there amongst the masses, and it was so amazing. You really feel like you're there. Have you been there yet? Have you visited?
No, I have not. I want to. Again, Dave's closer than I am. I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's in L.A., so I think he has an opportunity to go visit much easier than me.
You have to. And I'm going to the Star Wars Celebration this year. Like, I'm Star Wars. You know, everything about me is Star Wars. I'm just like, I love it so much. So I definitely recommend a trip there.
It's there now?
Oh, yeah, Dave.
I'm sorry?
What were you going to say, Dave?
It's there now?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely
Disneyland.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the biggest thing since sliced bread. Haven't you seen all the promotions? See, Dave's too busy, Felicia.
Yeah,
the
CEO. Because I'm so close. It's like being next
the new ride, I think it's called Rise of the Resistance, came out last weekend. So that's like a 22-minute experience that I haven't done yet. But I mean, I've done the Millennium Falcon ride, which was really cool. So I'm looking forward to riding the other ride.
I'll have to put it on my list.
Yeah.
All right.
So I was going to say when Neil was talking that I was really surprised to see that cameo of Han Solo in there. And, I forgot what else I was going to say. But, I know. If it makes money, Neil, there will be another sequel. You can guarantee that.
Oh, but again, you got.
I don't know.
See, she's. Again, we cannot bring that up, Dave. All right. So, Dave's final question is the one that why we have Caregiver Dave on the show, even though he's so awesome in his questions. But Caregiver Dave is a caregiver. And, Dave, go ahead and ask the last question to Felicia.
Well, I'm a caregiver, 23 years. My wife had a stroke, lost her speech, became paralyzed, and now I travel the country on TV and stages just telling people how they can stay alive and how they can help caregivers stay alive, because 30% of them die before their loved ones do. So my question on this show to every celebrity that comes on is, what's been your experience with caregiving? You know, your parents, your grandparents, do you sometimes, you're probably still very young to worry about aging parents, but maybe you have some aging grandparents. I don't know.
I'm unfortunately I lost my grandma and both my grandmas actually. One when I was like 3 years old, and then one when I do remember I was 13. And my sister and I, when we were 13 and 14, we went and visited our grandma on my father's side, and she wasn't the old grandma that we've known growing up, the lovely woman, the lovely Jamaican woman, you know, making us grilled cheese in the kitchen. She was she had breast cancer at the time, and she was sort of, her mind wasn't the same. I'm kind of getting a little emotional, but I mean, it was very important to my sister and I to make sure that we were there and helping her, feeding her and dressing her and making sure that she was okay, because at that time our grandpa had passed a year prior. So, you know, she was sort of not doing well after that and also being sick. So that was very, very important to my sister and I to be there and her time of need. Yeah. So that is something that I remember, you know, fondly, but not so fondly as well, because you're seeing a loved one not doing so well. So that's the story that comes to my mind when you ask.
All right.
Doing that. So the next time.
No, thank you for asking me that question. That was a good one.
All right, I got you emotional.
All right, so
no, I'm thinking of my grandma.
Oh, that's sweet. CaregiverDave.com to find information. But Felicia, where can we find info on you? Your one woman show coming up soon as well. Best place we can find info.
Yes, so I am doing a one woman show for the Hollywood Fringe Festival in Los Angeles. So that will be happening in June, and I'm currently working on that and developing it. I am producing, writing, and acting in it, obviously, because I'm the one woman. So I'm working on that right now, and you know, the website will be up hopefully in the next month or so.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. We shake up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop-shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio. The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.